All right, diving right in today. We're taking a close look at a California case, Jones v. Demerchop.
Okay.
This one really gets into the nitty-gritty of expert witness fees and how those costs factor into settlement talks, especially when you bring in California Code of Civil Procedure Section 998.
Yeah.
If anyone out there listening has ever wondered how those litigation costs can really sway a case or how much weight a seemingly simple settlement offer can carry, this is the deep dive for you.
It really is. I mean, for anyone working in law, especially when you get to that point where you're figuring out the money, you know, who's footing the bill for what could feel like learning a whole new language?
Absolutely.
And that's what we're aiming for with this Jones v. Demerchop deep dive, right? To pull out the crucial points, to make sense of these expert fee battles, and to understand those smart moves folks can make with those pretrial settlement offers.
So let's lay out the scenario. Back in 1996, we have Patricia Jones, and she has a bunionectomy performed by Dr. Demerchop. Now, after the surgery, she starts experiencing some bruising and staining, which leads her and her husband to file a lawsuit. Uh-huh. They allege negligence, battery, even loss of consortium, and they're going after both the hospital and Dr. Demerchop.
Right.
The hospital actually managed to get out of the case pretty early with a summary judgment.
Okay.
But the claims against Dr. Demerchop, those go all the way to trial.
Yep.
And here's where things get interesting. The jury finds no liability on the doctor's part. You might think, case closed, right?
Right.
Not so fast. The focus then shifts to a dispute over $5,440 in expert witness fees.
Yeah, and that's what really throws those expert fees into the spotlight.
Yeah.
It's his pretrial settlement offer Dr. Demerchop put on the table for the Joneses under, you know, Section 998. It was a pretty straightforward proposal.
Mm-hmm.
Let judgment be entered against me, and I'll waive all costs. Now, you look at that initially, and it might seem like Dr. Demerchop's giving something up.
Yeah.
But you got to think about the strategy behind it. The Joneses, they said no to this offer, and that refusal really becomes the heart of this whole fight over who pays what.
So let's break down that rejected offer. So Dr. Demerchop, he wins at trial. Jury says not liable. Then he wants to get back his litigation costs.
Mm-hmm.
The total comes out to a pretty hefty $14,555.46. And within that figure, you have that $5,440 for the expert witness fees.
Right.
Now, the trial court gives the okay to these costs, expert fees included.
Right.
But the Joneses, they're not having it. They appeal, arguing the trial court shouldn't have awarded those fees and saying there wasn't enough evidence to back them up anyway.
Yeah, and that sets us up with the two big legal questions the appellate court had to grapple with.
Okay.
First, was that Section 998 offer Dr. Demerchop made even a valid one?
Right.
That means looking at this good faith idea and whether the offer, when it was made, had a reasonable prospect of acceptance.
Right.
And that second question was whether the trial court was right to award those expert witness fees.
Yeah.
It really comes down to examining the trial judge's power under Section 998 to shift who's responsible for the costs after an offer has been rejected, especially if the party rejecting it doesn't end up doing any better at trial.
So let's focus on this good faith aspect for a minute. The Joneses, their argument was essentially that Dr. Demerchop's offer, you know, I'll let you win, but you get nothing and we each pay our own way. They saw that as just a tactic, a token offer meant to trigger cost shifting down the line if you won at trial. But the appellate court, they didn't quite see it that way, did they?
No, they didn't. And their reasoning on this is really crucial for understanding how courts look at these settlement offers.
Yeah.
The key point is this. Even though the offer wasn't about a direct payment to the Joneses, that waiver of costs that actually had real value, significant value, the appellate court, they specifically said that by turning down the offer, the Joneses were still at risk of having to cover Dr. Demerchop's costs if they lost, which is, of course, what happened. So to the appellate court, getting rid of that potential financial burden for the Joneses wasn't some meaningless gesture, wasn't a token.
That makes sense. It's not just about what you could get. It's also about what you might avoid losing.
Precisely. And what's really interesting is the appellate court went on to say that because the jury ultimately sided with Dr. Demerchop, that verdict actually acted as prima facie evidence.
Uh-huh.
Think of it as evidence that's assumed to be true unless you can prove otherwise that his settlement offer was reasonable back when he made it.
Mm.
It's huge because it completely changed the situation. Now, the Joneses had to prove that the offer wasn't reasonable, and they couldn't convince the court of that.
Okay, so let's shift gears and talk about those expert witness fees specifically. The Joneses, they also argued that Dr. Demerchop hadn't given enough hard proof to justify those $5,440 in fees. What kind of documentation did he actually give the court?
This is where we get into the nuts and bolts of getting those costs back.
Right.
Dr. Dermachobe's attorney gave the court a declaration. And that declaration included the actual bills from the expert witnesses.
Okay.
It also had the expert witness disclosures that are part of the normal back and forth of information sharing during discovery in a lawsuit.
Gotcha.
The appellate court brought up Nelson v. Anderson, a case that sets a precedent here. It gives courts some wiggle room. They don't always need mountains of paperwork itemizing every single expense.
Right.
Instead, they can often figure out if costs were reasonable and necessary just by looking at the overall context of the case.
So they essentially looked at the fact that the bills matched up with the expert getting ready for trial and potentially testifying, even though they didn't have a trial transcript to review for the appeal.
Exactly. The appellate court stressed that without a complete record of the trial, they had to go with the trial judge's firsthand understanding of what happened in the courtroom. The trial judge had seen the expert's role, had the chance to decide whether their fees were necessary.
Right, right.
The appellate court really hammered home that it's incredibly tough to prove abuse of discretion. That basically means the appellate court saying the trial judge's decision was so off base, so unreasonable, that no other fair-minded judge would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
And the Joneses just didn't present enough evidence to clear that bar.
Okay, so we've gone through the legal logic, but let's talk practical takeaways. What does this case mean strategically for lawyers on both sides of a lawsuit?
If you're the defendant, Jones v. Dermachobe really shows how smart it is to make those Section 998 offers early on. And here's the thing. As we've seen, those offers don't have to be about handing over money directly, offering to just waive costs. Even if you, as the defendant, feel good about your case, that can put a lot of pressure on the plaintiff. They have to seriously think about the risks of going to trial, knowing they could get stuck with a huge bill for your costs if they don't win.
It makes them really weigh those options.
Exactly. So for you listening, imagine you're in some kind of dispute, maybe not even a full-blown lawsuit. This case shows how an offer that doesn't seem to give you anything tangible right now, like just agreeing to walk away without making the other side pay your costs, that can hold a lot of weight and make them really consider their chances in the long run.
And what about the plaintiffs? What's the big takeaway for them?
Well, for them, the big lesson is that there's a real risk, a potentially big financial risk, that comes with saying no to settlement offers, even ones that might not seem so great because there's no cash on the table.
Right.
If a plaintiff rejects an offer and then doesn't do any better at trial, they could end up paying a big chunk of the defendant's costs that piled up after that offer, which, as we saw here, can include those expert witness fees.
Yeah.
Plaintiffs really need to look closely at how strong their case is. Balance that against what it could cost them to turn down a settlement.
So the Joneses, they saw this whole waive all costs offer as a kind of tactic. Was there anything to that argument from a purely strategic point of view, even if the court didn't agree legally?
You know, strategically, the Joneses weren't totally off base to be wary.
Okay.
A defendant who's feeling pretty confident might make that kind of offer mainly to set themselves up for cost shifting if they win without actually intending to give up anything substantial.
Right.
But the court's focus, it's on the offer's objective value when it was made. Even if the defendant's main goal was strategic cost shifting, the fact that the offer did have a real benefit, because, you know, the plaintiff could avoid that risk of paying the defendant's cost, it meant the court couldn't just brush it off as meaningless.
It sounds like this case really expands the strategic options for defendants using Section 998. This ability to use a cost waiver offer as leverage, that seems pretty powerful.
Oh, it is. And in some ways, you could see it as a win-win in certain situations.
Okay.
The plaintiff avoids the risk of having to pay the defendant's costs. And the defendant, even though they're technically giving up a potential money judgment on costs, they limit their overall liability and they get to end the lawsuit.
Right. Wrap things up.
Exactly. Like we've been saying, plaintiffs need to be super careful, realistic about their odds of winning at trial before turning down even an offer that's not about money, like a waiver of costs, especially if their case isn't so strong.
Now, you mentioned documentation earlier. This case suggests that even if you don't have to give a line-by-line breakdown of every expense, you still need some proof that those costs were necessary and reasonable. It seemed like the court cut Dr. Dermachobe some slack with the paperwork for those expert fees. Could the Joneses have argued against that more effectively, even with the Nelson v. Anderson precedent?
Well, even with that flexibility from Nelson v. Anderson, the Joneses might have had a better shot if they could have pointed to something specific about those expert fees that seemed way too high or not connected to the lawsuit at all, or even just poorly documented, even at a high level.
Like what?
For example, if the bills were super vague or covered time before the lawsuit even started, that would raise some eyebrows.
Right.
But without a trial transcript, the appellate court had to lean heavily on the trial judge's assessment that the fees were generally okay considering the whole case.
I see.
So to really challenge those fees on appeal, the Joneses needed more concrete evidence that something wasn't right.
So when we take a step back and look at the bigger picture, what's the main policy goal that Jones v. Dummer-Chubb is reinforcing?
At its heart, this case really drives home the whole point of California Code of Civil Procedure Section 998, which is to get people to settle legal disputes and to cut down on the number of lawsuits that end up going all the way to trial.
Yeah.
The way it works is if someone unreasonably rejects a reasonable settlement offer, they might have to pay the other side's costs. This system is meant to encourage people to seriously consider and accept good opportunities to resolve their cases without going to court.
So because the doctor won, that essentially validated his settlement offer in the eyes of the court.
Yeah.
That seems like a pretty big obstacle for the Joneses to overcome in their appeal.
It does show how much weight the Kurtz give to the final outcome of the trial when they're deciding if a previous settlement offer was reasonable.
Yeah.
It's set up to discourage people from taking unnecessary risks by rejecting offers that turn out to be better than what they get in court.
So for our listeners tuning in today, the main takeaway from this deep dive into Jones v. Dummer-Chubb is that when you're looking at a settlement offer under Section 998, it's not just about the dollar amount being offered.
Right.
You really need to think about risk management. Even offers that aren't about money, like Dr. Dummer-Chubb's offer to waive costs, those can have huge financial consequences down the road.
Absolutely. And it makes you think, how might this strategic use of those non-monetary Section 998 offers change the landscape of litigation? Could we see even more creative settlement ideas in the future, especially in cases where it's tough to agree on money?
Yeah.
It really gets you thinking about the bigger picture of using cost shifting as a way to push for dispute resolution.
It really does. Great insights today. Until next time.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening.